Divided Kingdom evening news program that many of you have come to know and trust. We're coming to you on WWCR Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on 4.840 megahertz and on Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on 7.490 megahertz. We can also be heard on Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net, Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern, repeating at 11 p.m. Tuesday, April 23rd, Fox commentator Brett Baer reported, quote, controversial, end of quote, Alex Jones bullhorned the White House today. And, of course, that was on behalf of free speech. Later, I heard the audio clip of Alex's impassioned speech, almost like Patrick Henry, reborn for our age, an age of desperate dangers and yet promise, as Christians pray ceaselessly for America's repentance and restoration. Alex addressed the president. President Trump, you must defend free speech and the First Amendment. He stated that the president must take action against the big tech giants now, Congress needing to implement Section 230, thus removing social media and internet control that is being given now by fiat in the EU regulators and their regulations and the Chinese communist system. Alex said, quote, the argument that the government can't regulate this is bogus. The Chi-Coms are working with traitors in our government, end of quote. He pointed out the dangers of the Chinese social credit score system being set up worldwide, thus in America too. This would mean much greater discrimination than present Facebook and Twitter actions, such as barring Reverend Franklin Graham for his Christian views. This would be like the old Soviet Russia, in which college graduates would be told to become taxi drivers or ditch diggers according to their state loyalty or dissent. Jones's loud bullhorn message continued, addressing President Trump. InfoWars stands for the Republic. This is globalism. And thanks to your leadership, we're winning. Now, Mr. President, you must defeat this attempt to destroy the First Amendment. They'll steal the election. Now is the time to stand against these censors and take action. And, of course, he said that they lie. Or we're saying that, rather. They lie when they say to Congress that they never censor Christians and conservatives, that is, these big tech groups. And some of them were meeting, I believe at least the head of one of them, was meeting during the time Alex did the bullhorning. And so they do lie, don't they, Lou?
Yes, they do lie. This is Lou Caverly. Elizabeth Cupid Caverly and I first got shocking evidence of a deep state, or NWO, a long-range plan that hates Christians, back in around the year 2007 or so. Our late dear friend, Dr. Noah Hutchings, great pastor, who took Bibles to China many times and headed the longest-running Christian radio program, the Southwest Radio Church. Noah called Elizabeth. He told her she had to see a government document. It may have come out of Maricopa County, Arizona. We're not sure now. But the document talked of certain conservative religious beliefs, such as the second coming of Christ, as being a symptom of a domestic terrorist. Noah Hutchings, whom I later interviewed about his life, including his valiant World War II service with radio in the South Pacific.
I believe you told me that was radar, Lou.
You know, I'm not sure. We're going to have to get his biography out.
We'll have to check on that, whether it was radar or radio.
Yes. Anyway, in the South Pacific, where he served, he was truly dumbfounded. Dr. Hutchings lived into his 90s, commenting astutely on the changes to America in the Obama years. And, let's see.
I think you were going to tell about the book that he and Carol, his daughter, wrote. I think on the side there, there was something about the book.
I believe that I don't see that right here.
Well, you know, I can come in on that, too.
Yes.
It was the Christian Cleansing of America was the
title. That's right, yes.
And of course, it was during the Obama years, and it focus on things like Obamacare and various changes in the military and so forth and so on. But it was important. You know, I'm seeing that on my own script. Yes, no wonder you didn't have
it. Oh, yes, yes.
And now, about 5 years onward after his death, we're in the Trump years, and the assault on our First Amendment free speech rights has only intensified through social media. And these giants of social media, you see, at the same time, they're in conjunction with the satanic one world forces, and together they're building a dossier of propaganda to infect and poison the public mind. The controlled MSM, you know, that's mainstream media, is as fully invested in this assault during the hoped-for takedown of America's borders and life as we hear the CIA was, Lou, decades ago in influencing the publishing of books of darkness and despair. These were to demoralize and weaken the American soul. Had you heard that before?
I don't believe I had.
No, I just heard that recently. I thought that was very, very interesting.
Yes.
Tonight we have a series of vital articles that illustrate this collusion between MSM, social media giants, and AI, that's artificial intelligence technology, as well as the larger roles of EU authoritarianism and one world church heresy. There is historical precedent for an unholy alliance of media with tyranny in the Nazi era. Now, you think, listeners, I'm going to say something like Der Spiegel or some newspaper that was there at Hitler's time? That's what you think I'm going to say, don't you? No. This is the headline. Associated Press cooperated with the Nazis. And this came out of Way of Life, April 22nd, 2016. The following is excerpted from Associated Press Willingly Cooperated, Times of Israel, March 30th, 2016. The Associated Press news agency willingly cooperated with Nazi Germany, submitting to the regime's restrictive rulings on the freedom of the press and providing it with images from its photo archives to be used in its anti-Semitic and anti-Western propaganda machine, a new report reveals. When Adolf Hitler's National Socialists rose to power in 1933, all international news agencies but the U.S.-based AP were forced to leave Germany. The AP continued to operate in the Third Reich until 1941, when the United States joined World War II. According to German historian Harriet Scharnberg, the world's biggest news agency was only allowed to remain in Germany because it signed a deal with the regime. The news agency lost control over its copy by submitting itself to the Schriftleitergesetz, editor's law, agreeing not to print any material calculated to weaken the strength of the Reich abroad or at home. And that was a quote, calculated to weaken the strength of the Reich abroad or at home. She wrote in an article published in the academic journal Studies in Contemporary History. Scharnberg's research was first reported by the UK-based Guardian newspaper. According to the paper, the Nazis' so-called editor's law forced AP employees to contribute material for the Nazi Party's propaganda division. One of the four photographers working for the company in the 1930s was Franz Roth, a member of the SS paramilitary unit's propaganda division. His pictures were hand-picked by Hitler, the Guardian writes. The cooperation with the prestigious American news agency allowed Hitler to portray his war of extermination as a conventional war, Scharnberg told the Guardian. And you know what comes to mind is that scene when Roger Stone and his wife were pulled out of bed and he was kind of rounded up. Remember how CNN was given the carte blanche to go down that street and take the photos, and it seemed like some collusion with the FBI in staging the pictures? You know, there's nothing new under the sun, God says. Well, let's move on with this because you're going to see a pattern.
The subtle denigration of Christians and Christianity is shown not as prejudice of a few, but as a concerted policy of talking points. And now we have an article from WorldNet Daily. Leftists won't say Christians. They invent a new term for bomb victims. This was posted on April the 22nd, 2019. As establishment media long had been reluctant to identify Islam as the source of terrorism, while readily labeling those who do as Islamophobes. Now it seems there's an unwillingness to identify one of the primary targets of terrorism, Christians. And they don't want to call them Christians. Their new word, Easter worshippers. One of the early users of the term was Barack Obama, who wrote, quote, "The attacks on tourists and Easter worshippers in Sri Lanka are an attack on humanity. On a day devoted to love, redemption, and renewal, we pray for the victims and stand with the people of Sri Lanka." Unquote. Hillary Clinton joined in.
May I interrupt to ask a question?
Yes.
Was that a little slip by you, redemptions, or was it plural?
In this article, it is plural.
I think that's interesting. Isn't that an exact quote from Obama?
Supposedly, yeah.
Now, you see, the only way is Jesus, we say, as Christians.
Yeah.
But remember how Muslim-oriented he was, the redemptions. I find that very interesting.
So do I.
Go ahead. And what about Hillary?
Well, she joined in saying, quote, "On this holy weekend, for many faiths, we must stand united against hatred and violence. In praying for everyone affected by today's horrific acts on Easter worshippers and travelers in Sri Lanka," unquote. Talk radio host Rush Limbaugh noted Monday of Obama and Clinton, quote, "They're supposedly Christians, and they can't even bring themselves to say slaughter of Christians. They have to say Easter worshippers." Millennials say, "What are those?" Political analyst Sebastian Gorka asked his Twitter followers to compare Clinton's reaction to the recent New Zealand mosque attack with the Sri Lanka bombings against Christians. Tiana Lowe wrote, at Tiana Lowe, I guess that's a repetition there, Tiana Lowe wrote at the Washington Examiner that very simply, quote, "Terrorists want to threaten their targets into submission, invisibility, and then elimination," unquote. "I doubt the three Christian politicians erased the identities of the Sri Lanka victims with any ill will, but denying them their cross, the faith that made them martyrs, ultimately pushes us one step closer to a submission to the wind of terror," unquote. She also cited Julian Castro, a Democratic candidate for president, saying, quote, "On a day of redemption and hope, the evil of these attacks on Easter worshippers and tourists in Sri Lanka is deeply saddening," unquote. So far, the death toll from the suicide bombings has been estimated to be about 300, and I'll interject, loose speaking, that it is above that now, with hundreds more injured. Lowe went to the point of the horror in Sri Lanka, quote, "A jihadist group murdered nearly 300, and as I said, it's more than that now, 300 Christians in Sri Lanka in a coordinated terrorist attack across multiple churches and hotels on Easter Sunday. The attack was unequivocally abhorrent and ought to have been easy enough to condemn outright. But apparently some odd talking points circulated among Democratic messengers." She continued, quote, "If just one prominent Democrat had used the term Easter worshippers, a phrase I don't ever recall having heard in my life, rather than Christians, you could make the generous cause a case that was meant not to offend Eastern and Oriental Christians who observe the Julian calendar and don't celebrate Easter until this week." All three tweeting the same strained wording seems noteworthy, though. Democrats have equivocated on anti-Christian terrorism. And again, this is Lou interjecting. When I looked up the exact Webster's definition of equivocate, here's what I got: to use equivocal terms in order to deceive, mislead, hedge, etc. And a synonym is to be deliberately ambiguous. And back to Tiana Lowe, she said, quote, "Erasing the intentions of violent terrorists only empowers them by erasing their evil," unquote. A blogger for the Twitter news aggregator, Twitchy, pointed out that Media Matters' Parker Molloy doubled down by criticizing those concerned about the erasure of the victim's Christian identity. Quote, "What an absurd, utterly stupid non-controversy. They didn't say the special word that I wanted. Chill, guys. They said that because they were referring to people at an Easter service. It really goes without saying that people attending Easter services are Christians. Then what's the harm in saying it, Parker? The twitchy blogger asked. And this is Lou again. Should we expect anything more from a George Soros organization, Media Matters? Back to the article. Another Twitter user commented, quote, "This is deliberate sanitization, not mentioning the face of the victims or the murderers across the mainstream media. Give me a break," unquote. The News Opinions Quotes website pointed out that the one-sided reporting extended even further. CNN does 67 updates for the Sri Lanka story with zero, get that, zero mentions blaming Islamic terrorists, it explained. This narrative has already been set by American mainstream media on how they're supposed to handle the Sri Lanka terrorists. Our terrorist attacks on Easter Sunday. There are certain things that can be said and others that must be avoided at all costs. J.D. Rucker wrote, quote, "The closest they came to blaming radical Islamic terrorists in their primary coverage story was a mention in a quote by diplomatic editor Nick Robertson, in which he notes the obvious, that it has the hallmarks," and that's in quotes, "the hallmarks of Islamic terrorism, but then quickly notes that there are no known radical Islamic terrorist groups in the area," unquote. On Twitter, Carol Markowitz pointed out, quote, "Easter worshippers makes no sense. The Pittsburgh shooting wasn't Shabbat celebrators, and the New Zealand shooting wasn't Friday prayer adherents," unquote. Monica Showalter explained, an American thinker, "They don't like Christians to start with, and they've since gone a long way to coddle Muslim extremists too. Having to acknowledge that Christians are in peril might just make someone in flyover country identify with them." Can't have that. Pacific Pundit credited or created a list of what was called a Democrat coordinated attack on Christians. Also rerunning the meme were Colorado Governor Jared Polis, Greg Stanton, Brian Bowman, Dan Kildee, Justin Trudeau, and others. And this is Lou. Think of the scope of this talking point. Cooperation. Even Justin Trudeau. Antichrist spirit is rising quickly all over the world.
And I must interrupt a moment to say that we had a very important program last time, and it'll be in the archives probably within a week, and that was the asking of the question whether the Notre Dame Cathedral destruction was a global Illuminati sacrifice ritual to bring in the New World Order. And we've had an alleged sighting of Michelle Obama on a cruise going by as this burned, sipping on champagne. We can't corroborate that, but if true, that's a very interesting story. And a lot of our information came from Leo Zagami's interview on Alex Jones. And now I have to put out a caveat. The same as we did with Rodney Howard Brown, after we watched some DVDs that showed him strongly involved with the Holy Laughter and some of the heretical kinds of frenzied church worship, we didn't totally recommend him anymore. And the same with Leo Zagami. I was very shocked yesterday to hear Owen Schroyer interviewing him when Leo told that his investigation showed that Jesus lived. He did not die on the cross. So we can no longer certainly promote that kind of view. And, you know, if any of you are having those seeds of doubt put in your soul, just ask yourself about that program we did on Betty Maltz that was very well documented that she had been dead for 30 minutes. And when she came back to life, she looked out and the sunbeams on each beam was a part of "I am the way, the truth, the life" from John, from the gospel. Now, the only power in heaven and earth who could raise her from the dead after 30 minutes is not going to be someone who was a mortal man who lived out his life and supposedly married Mary Magdalene, some of those other atrocious heretical things that are spread around to weaken people's faith. No, the God Lou and I worship and that you listeners worship is real. He's not a dead Buddha. He is living. Jesus Christ, yesterday, today, forever. He is not just a mortal man. So we really do warn you against believing such heresy. But now, let's pick up this interesting story, this dossier that's being built against Christians, these talking points so widely being, the network is just so wide with even Justin Trudeau.
Going on with that article, explains Showalter, quote, "What was almost certainly going on was a bid to deny Christians their identity because that is embarrassing to them." In other words, to the ones denying the Christians. "Having to admit that Christians are being specially singled out for killings by Muslim terrorists is a bridge too far for establishment Democrats and might force them to admit they were wrong all along about the religiously motivated warfare of the Islamic terrorists," unquote. Ironically, many Christians would rather identify the day as Resurrection Sunday instead of Easter to separate it from pagan traditions.
And now we're going to move into what some of these big tech giants are all about. Google censoring abortion results for YouTube videos. This was from Way of Life, January 25th, 2019. Google, which owns YouTube, censors the search results for, quote, abortion, so that hard-hitting anti-abortion videos no longer appear in the top 10. An internal discussion thread leaked to Breitbart News reveals Google regularly intervenes in search results on its YouTube video platform, including a recent intervention that pushed pro-life videos out of the top 10 search results for abortion. The term abortion was added to a blacklist file, and that's in quotes, for, quote, controversial YouTube queries, end of quote, which contains a list of search terms that the company considers sensitive. The smoking gun, Google, manipulated search results, Breitbart, January 16, 2019. The videos were not removed, but they were made to appear lower in the list of results so that they would be seen by fewer people. A Google spokesperson admitted to the Daily Mail that this was done, but claimed that the videos in question contained, quote, misinformation or, quote, graphic content. YouTube failed to explain how congressional testimony from Dr. Anthony Levitino, a gynecologist and former abortion doctor, also disappeared from the top 10 results could be misinformation. But perhaps the most obvious contradiction to YouTube's comment is Abortion, My Experience, a video that, according to the Slate report, previously featured at around ninth in the search results. The video is a woman's personal story of being pressured into an abortion by an allegedly abusive partner and subsequently regretting the decision. The video doesn't feature any graphic images. As it's a personal story, it can't be accused of misinformation either. It seems disappearing the stories of women who don't have the correct abortion experience is now YouTube's policy. YouTube admits it meddled with search results. That's a title from Breitbart, January 17, 2019.
And now we have another article, also about the electronic media, entitled Democrat Facebook / Twitter Misinformation Campaign Against Roy Moore Exposed. The following is excerpted from Facebook Suspends Accounts Tied to Dem Disinformation Scheme. Fox News, December 25th, 2018. Facebook suspended five accounts linked to Democratic operatives who engaged in, quote, coordinated, inauthentic behavior, unquote, in a bid to steer votes away from Alabama Republican Roy Moore during last year's special Senate election. The announcement comes following a New York Times report last week that exposed the scheme, in which the users created a Facebook page and imitated conservative Alabamians who weren't satisfied with a Republican candidate while encouraging others to write in another candidate. The scheme also involved creating thousands of fake Russian accounts on Twitter that began following Moore. This effort attracted attention from local and national media, falsely suggesting Russia was backing Moore's candidacy. Russian invasion, this is in quotes, Roy Moore sees spike in Twitter followers from land of Putin, read the headline of an article at the Montgomery Advertiser just months before the election night. Other outlets shortly picked up the story. And here's a concluding comment by the Friday Church News Notes editor. In addition to these lies, Roy Moore was the target of unsubstantiated allegations of sexual misconduct with teenage girls when he was in his 30s. His campaign called the allegations, quote-unquote, baseless, and the very definition of fake news, but the damage was done. The man lost the election due to dirty politics, pure and simple.
The unholy alliance of big tech and leftist government result in dehumanizing insanity. Part of the plan to weaken the family and bring in AI, and that's artificial intelligence. Using he, she pronouns banned during hearings in California. The following is excerpted from Democrat state senator announces using he, she pronouns will be banned, the Daily Wire, January 19, 2019. California knows no bounds when it comes to radical LGBT activism. On Thursday, State Senator and Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Hannah Beth Jackson, Democrat from Santa Barbara, announced that only gender-neutral pronouns will be permitted during committee hearings. Quote, our first order of business is to approve the committee rules. I'd like to note, in respecting the fact that we are now a state recognizing the non-binary designation as a gender, he and she, we are now merging them, so we are using what my grammar teacher said would have had a heart attack over. We are using the phrase they and replacing other designations, so it's a gender-neutral designation. In the spirit of gender neutrality for the rules of the committee, we now designate the chair as they, Jackson corrected the record. As reported by the Daily Wire in 2017, California became the first state in the union to create a non-binary option for legal documents and driver's licenses. The act allows California residents to select an option X or non-binary option on driver's licenses, birth certificates, marriage licenses, and other state-issued documents. Then we have another one. Google employees protest the use of word family to refer to children. The morally, and this, again, is from Way of Life, January 25, 2019. The morally perverted viewpoint of a large number of Google employees was evident in an event that occurred in March 2017 when the use of the term family-friendly by a Google executive in a weekly company-wide presentation caused an uproar. The term family was used in the context of discussing a product aimed at children. A Google employee stormed out of the meeting in protest and later ranted in an internal communication thread that linking family to children is, quote, offensive, inappropriate, homophobic, and wrong, end of quote. He said, quote, this is a diminishing and disrespectful way to speak. The use of family as a synonym for with children has a long-standing association with deeply homophobic organizations, end of quote. The Daily Caller, January 16, 2019, had the headline, Disrespectful, Google Employees Meltdown Over the Word Family. About 100 other Google employees agreed with this anti-traditional family diatribe. One said, quote, as a straight person in a relationship, I find the term family offensive because it excludes me and my boyfriend having no children of our own. Another said, my family consists of me and several other trans feminine folks, some of whom I'm dating. We're all supportive of each other and eventually aspire to live together. Just because we aren't a heterosexual couple with 2.5 kids, a white picket fence, and a dog doesn't mean we're not a family. Another said that using family to mean people with kids is also annoying to me as a straight cis woman who doesn't have or want kids. My husband, my parents, and my pets are my family. Google Vice President Pavni Diwanji apologized for using family in a traditional way and asked for help from employees on how the company could use language more inclusively and less offensively. He pleaded with his liberal-minded employees, please help us get to a better state. Teach us how to talk about it in an inclusive way if you feel like we are not doing it well. It is sad and frightful that the great power of the world's premier search engine is in the hands of such people.
And now we have from Fox News, dated November 27, 2018. Chick-fil-A defends itself after being excluded by private New Jersey University over its Christian values. This is by Lucas Michelionis. Chick-fil-A fired back at a private New Jersey university that believes the restaurant doesn't belong on the menu for students over its Christian values. Rider University asked students earlier this year what fast food chain they would like to see on campus, circulating a survey in which students can select their preferred choice. But once it became clear the students were craving Chick-fil-A, the university excluded the option, citing concerns over the company's attitudes towards LGBTQ community. The chain pushed back against the university's characterization, saying the restaurant is merely providing food and doesn't have any agenda. The restaurant's spokesperson told CBS News, quote, "Chick-fil-A is a restaurant company focused on food, service, and hospitality, and our restaurants and licensed locations and college campuses welcome everyone. We have no policy of discrimination against any group, and we do not have a political or social agenda," unquote. The school said in a statement that the Chick-fil-A option was removed, quote, "based on the company's record widely perceived to be in opposition to the LGBTQ community," unquote. It admitted that the move could be perceived as a form of exclusion, but the institution wanted to remain, quote, "faithful to our values of inclusion," unquote. Chick-fil-A is a fast food chain well known for its Christian values, whose corporate purpose is, quote, "to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that is entrusted to us," unquote. The company has been criticized in the past over CEO Dan Cathy's views concerning gay marriage. In 2012, he came out in defense of the traditional definition of marriage and expressed views critical of gay marriage stemming from his Christian faith. Chick-fil-A was removed as one of the options based on the company's record widely perceived to be in opposition to the LGBTQ community. Rider University said it will organize a forum so all students and faculty members could voice their views over the situation. Earlier this month, the Pittsburgh Public Schools Board of Directors voted unanimously to oppose Chick-fil-A as the corporate sponsor for the Pittsburgh Kids Marathon and Kids of Steel program, Trib Live reported. The school board voted the resolution over concerns about the company's historic stance on LGBTQ issues. The school board resolution said, according to the outlet, quote, "the family-owned, privately held restaurant company has expressed views contrary to and in conflict with the district's non-discrimination policies," unquote. In June, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey was also slammed for merely spending money at the restaurant, prompting his apology, saying he, quote, "completely forgot about the restaurant's background," unquote.
And we see that this dossier that maligns Christians and constitutionalists and nationalists, those who just genuinely love America, this is being built up deliberately. And I want to make sure that we can get this article in today. Time Magazine for April 1st, 2019, had an article, "Hatred and Healing," and this concerned the slaughter at the Christ Church's Lynnwood Mosque in New Zealand. So this article was by Charlie Campbell from Christ Church, and we have to look at a few excerpts of this Time article. There was a father of six, they recount, who was standing there, and he had been inside on March 15th when a white supremacist showed up with a carload of guns and a video camera on his helmet. They go on to say, "the safety of a South Pacific island nation was not the only illusion destroyed that day. Also undone was the popular conception of international terrorism." Now, we interject here. This is Rethink. Remember a few years back you kept seeing this on TV, Rethink, Rethink. It was a little kind of a propaganda blurb. And transform, transformation, these were key buzzwords. But the article says the Christchurch attacks on two mosques that took at least 50 lives established white supremacy as a threat in Western societies nearly as formidable as terrorism carried out in the name of fundamentalist Islam. Now, we could refute that with a lot of statistics, but you see, they're building the narration, the narrative that will equate this kind of a right-wing nut white supremacist with fundamentalist Islam. And the article says, long pigeonholed as homegrown or domestic terrorism, the violence of right-wing extremists emerged in remote New Zealand as a transnational threat. Now, do we see this again? It's being made worldwide. This hatred is going to be developed for people who are Christians, we think. Here, a widely traveled and heavily armed Australian invoked white nationalism in the name of an international campaign against immigrants. The magnitude of the attacks would have thrown the spotlight onto rightist extremism, even if the killer had not streamed them on Facebook Live. See how everything's working together, all these big tech giants? Jacinda Ardern, New Zealand's prime minister, told Time that governments around the world needed to, quote, take a united front on what is a global issue, especially in tackling the places on the Internet where radicalization takes root. In national security circles, there were calls for governments to share intelligence on right-wing extremists in ways previously reserved for groups like the Islamic State. As three veteran U.S. counterterrorism officials wrote on the Lawfare blog. Now, you see how the two elements there, taking the united front on what is a global issue. We remember of Mr. Dunbar, that ex-ambassador to Afghanistan at 9/11, who said we can get on board and change the world. They're going to use this for the one world order. And we're going to bring up the dossiers of all the right-wing extremists, and those could be those people who believe in the second coming of Jesus. They're going to get them right up there in the same area as the Islamic State, so that in people's minds they will be equivocal. You know, equivocate, lie. And now the article says, adding to the urgency are indications that right-wing extremists have been emboldened by political leaders expressing the same xenophobia and intolerance. The attacker's online expressions of rage against non-white, non-Christian immigrants, he says, were being nearly endorsed by political rhetoric around banning immigration of Muslims and criminalizing refugees. Such distortion, we see what has happened to Europe, if we're going to tell the truth. But these people don't want to tell the truth. Going on in the article, they say there are many parallels between far-right extremism and ISIS. From the lost and angry young men targeted by it, to the propaganda, to the operations, says Peter W. Singer, a strategist at the New America think tank and author of Like War, The Weaponization of Social Media. And Lou, I have to ask whether he is the same Peter Singer Alex Jones has talked about for years. That Peter Singer has called for infanticide up to the age of 3. If it is the same man, we should really listen to this, you see. The article says, in 2017, the FBI said it was conducting 1,000 investigations into white supremacists and other domestic terrorist threats, roughly as many as it had open into people who may have been inspired by the Islamic State, according to the Washington Post. And the article says that fear over how immigration was affecting British society played a major role in the UK's Brexit decision, with 54% of Leave voters calling Islam a threat to the British way of life. That belief helped feed the violence. Now, here we see the real breakdown of propaganda, the lies, blaming the innocent Brits, you see, who were genuinely and justifiably apprehensive as to how their whole culture would change and how the violence would come in with radical Islam. But they're being blamed. They're being blamed that they helped feed the violence of the ones who came in. That's like saying in Germany that these German women wore short skirts and they shouldn't have done that because then it made the Muslims step out of their culture a little bit in odd ways, maybe. It confused those poor Muslims. And the article says, but we've not had an organized right-wing threat like we do now. There's just so much in this. that organization often occurs online, and we think that's true. The true breeding ground for these extremists is on less trafficked forums like Shan and 4chan, where anonymous users trade ostensibly ironic memes, jokes, and discussions laced with racism and misogyny. It was on one of these where the alleged shooter announced his rampage. Now, there are real warnings that there can be evil sites, and that we need to be fair, that perhaps there is something there. But to make us feel guilty, ordinary, innocent, good Americans, for identifying with our own culture, our own white Christian values, this is not objective. That certainly is not journalism. And then the article says, the hard fact is that in the U.S. at least, a measurable minority sympathize with the white supremacist cause. A 2018 study from a University of Alabama researcher found that among white non-Hispanic Americans, 28% expressed strong feelings of white identity. About 38% expressed strong feelings of white solidarity. And about 27% felt that whites suffer a meaningful amount of discrimination in American life. In a recent Military Times poll, 22% of service members said they saw signs of white nationalism or racist ideology in the armed forces. About 35% called white nationalism a significant threat to the country. See how we're mixing apples with oranges? It's normal for white Christian people to be proud of their heritage. And they could have strong feelings of identity. That's healthy. That's normal. But they're suddenly going to mix this with racism. No, you can't paint all of us as racist. We're not. We're just not. So we can see that what's going on there is diabolical. Former soldier Pete Bridall said he was shocked to see Confederate flags at Dunedin's Bruce Rifle Club, where the accused shooter was a member when he visited there in 2017. I find that suspicious. What about you, Lou? We're in New Zealand. Why would they have Confederate flags there?
Yeah, that is very questionable.
Kind of like a false flag event, isn't
it? Yeah, and again, it's guilt by association. Just because, you know...
Yes, exactly.
Just because he had that doesn't mean that everybody that had one of those is an out-and-out racist.
And we have an agenda. Of course we do. The article says New Zealand has about 250,000 licensed gun owners and an estimated 1.2 million registered firearms. But it just took a day for Ardern to say the nation's gun laws will change. By March 18th, her cabinet had agreed in principle to amendments to make our community safer, Ardern said. Trade Me, New Zealand's most popular auction site, announced it was voluntarily banning the sale of semi-automatic weapons. Time saw shaken teenagers approaching police officers on the street to ask how they could hand in their parents' firearms. Do I hear the violins, Lou? You know, this play on the emotion is like those lies about Kuwait, that the babies were being slaughtered in the incubators before we went into the Gulf War. Oh, we're so naive when we believe these things. And so Ardern followed this course that had worked elsewhere. The article says Australia restricted access to military-style weapons following the Port Arthur massacre of 1996, in which 35 people were killed. The UK banned private ownership of handguns in 1997 following the Dunblane massacre, when a gunman murdered 16 school children and a teacher before killing himself. Christchurch Mayor Leanne Dalziel tells Time that the Islamic greeting as Salamu alaikum, or peace be with you, is, quote, very much an expression of the peaceful city that we were and still are. Just filled with lies and half-truths. And what will that mean? We move on to see what might be coming to you and me if we don't get Congress to do something about the regulation of the internet and these tech giants, because we're under this, we're going to be under it more and more. China's social credit system, socialism in action. The following is excerpted from China's social credit system, futurism.com, December 2nd, 2017. In a contentious world first, China plans to implement a social credit score, officially referred to as a social credit score or SCS by 2020. The idea first appeared in a document from the State Council of China published in June 2014. It is a technological advancement so shocking to modern-minded paradigms that many can do little but sit back in defeatist chagrin as science fiction shows us its darker side. The SCS seems relatively simple. Every citizen in China, which now has numbers swelling to well over 1.3 billion, would be given a score that, as a matter of public record, is available for all to see. This citizen score comes from monitoring an individual's social behavior, from their spending habits and how regularly they pay bills, to their social interactions, and it'll become the basis of that person's trustworthiness, which would also be publicly ranked. This actually sounds worse than an Orwellian nightmare. A citizen's score affects their eligibility for a number of services, including the kinds of jobs or mortgages they can get. And it also impacts what schools their children qualify for. China's social credit score proves reality is darker than fiction. The government also says that this will allow the trustworthy to roam everywhere under heaven while making it hard for the discredited to take a single step, according to the Wall Street Journal. The major issue is this. The social credit score goes well beyond just rating one's ability to manage debt. In essence, it puts a number on a citizen, rating their worth as a human being, and it forces others to respect that rating. China's proposed social score is an absolute reaffirmation of China, continuing to push forward to be a complete police state, said Anurag Lal, former director of the U.S. National Broad Bank Task Force for the FCC under the Obama administration and president and CEO of mobility solutions firm Infinite Convergence, in an email to Futurism. They take it a step further by becoming not only an establishment of a totalitarian police state that monitors its people, but one that completely evades users' privacy. All forms of activity and interactions, online or otherwise, will be rated, available to view and stored as data. Ultimately, the problem is that socially acceptable behavior will be defined by the Chinese government, not a democratic process or an objective panel, and punitive measures will certainly be taken when a person breaks this trust. With the SCS, the Chinese government will actually hit two birds with one stone. They will have a way of promoting and enforcing what they consider to be socially acceptable behavior, and they will have a way of monitoring virtually all aspects of citizens' lives. Now, can we see what this will be like with these attitudes of the Democrats if they are allowed to go unfettered and build this dossier on Christians? And an organization that's been very important in a lot of this is the Southern Poverty Law Center. Tell us about it, Lou.
Through our work in Alternative Patriot Radio, Elizabeth and I were aware of alleged government complicity in using the Southern Poverty Law Center as a tool, with perhaps at least one woman broadcaster having an SPLC or being an SPLC member. So the naive public can now start to see some of its present-day hypocrisy and possible bad Obama connections. This article was from the Washington Times, Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019, by Valerie Richardson, entitled "Racial Bias Claims Its Southern Poverty Law Center's Status as Arbiter of Hate." As the Southern Poverty Law Center implodes over accusations of racial discrimination and sexual harassment, its legion of critics want answers and a swift burial of the embattled organization's status as the nation's judge and jury on hate. Senator Tom Cotton, Arkansas Republican, took the lead with a letter to the Internal Revenue Service requesting an investigation into the tax-exempt status of the incongruously wealthy nonprofit group, which he blasted as a, quote, racist and sexist slush fund devoted to defamation, unquote. Quote, "I've been long troubled by the Southern Poverty Law Center's activities, which are centered on serial defamation of its opponents, not on civil rights litigation, as its founding charter says," Mr. Cotton told the Washington Times. He went on to say, "Obviously, the revelations that the Southern Poverty Law Center has engaged in systematic racial discrimination and sexual harassment at the highest levels is very troubling as well. I think it bears on whether they should have tax-exempt status under our laws and benefit from the taxpayer subsidy, unquote. In addition, 60 of the Southern Poverty Law Center's favorite center-right targets called in an open letter Wednesday for the organization to release emails reportedly from fed-up staffers and a revolt that led to the toppling last month of the progressive monolith entrenched leadership. The letter also asked media outlets and corporations once again to quit relying uncritically on the Southern Poverty Law Center's quote-unquote hate designations, which leading Christian and conservative organizations such as the Family Research Council with racist outfits such as the Ku Klux Klan and the Aryan Nation. So the letter, led by Family Research Council President Tony Perkins, quote, SPLC has lost all credibility. We call on all media, corporations, social media companies, and financial institutions to immediately stop relying on the discredited and partisan hate and extremist lists, unquote. Still unclear is whether the scandal will prompt a second look from the center's prominent liberal donors, including Apple CEO Tim Cook and celebrity couple George and Amal Clooney, as well as whether the Southern Poverty Law Center will ever regain its disputed yet prestigious niche as America's hate arbiter. Consultant Marvin Levine asked in Nonprofit Quarterly, quote, how does an organization dedicated to, quote, fighting hate and bigotry and to justice for the most vulnerable members of society, unquote, ignore the signs of hate and bigotry within its own culture? How did its professional and board leadership not know that things were toxic enough to drive many staff to flee for safer places to work, unquote? The center has sought to repair the damage. On Tuesday, Karen Baines Dunning, a former juvenile court judge and board member, was named interim president and CEO, making her the first black leader of the civil rights group, which has been run for decades by Morris Dees and Richard Cohen, both of whom are white. The Southern Poverty Law Center said in a Tuesday statement, quote, our employees deserve a workplace that reflects our highest values, and we will ensure that it happens. The decision to name Karen as interim president is a crucial step in that process, unquote. Conducting what they called an external review of the Senate's practices is Tina Shen, one-time chief of staff to First Lady Michelle Obama, who will, quote, advise us on workplace culture issues.
And I think we can stop with that article right there. We can see the trend, what's happening. And now moving back to Zuckerberg, Friday Church News Notes, July 7, 2017. Zuckerberg says, Facebook, the new church. So if we think there aren't spiritual parts of this, we're wrong. And we know that there was a USA Today report that says everyone will be implanted with a microchip. That was in August 9th, 2017. We know that we're headed towards something really bad. I think we'll skip down to the article that you have about Zuckerberg's rules. Let's see if we can get some of that, because his plan, Zuckerberg's plan, number 17 there, Lou, because
All right.
these rules, we've got to hear what's planned. We don't want to be under the EU control.
This was dated April 5th, 2019 by David Harsanyi. In a recent op-ed, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg implored the state to get more involved in governing the Internet. Quote, every day we make decisions about what speech is harmful, what constitutes political advertising, and how to prevent sophisticated cyber attacks, he said. These are important for keeping our community safe, but if we were starting from scratch, we wouldn't ask companies to make these judgments alone. Unquote. For starters, and this is David speaking, there is no such thing as harmful speech. There might be speech that offends us. There might be speech we disagree with. There's also speech that's inarguably ugly, dishonest, pornographic, or despicable. Yet we, in quotes, allow these unpleasant words to go largely unregulated because we value the broader liberty of being able to offer opinions without government censors dictating which thoughts are acceptable. Then again, if Zuckerberg wants to rid his platform of this hate speech, no one is stopping him. Facebook allegedly employs a number of new mechanisms to achieve this very task. Good luck. But Zuckerberg claims that we, as society, have a special responsibility to facilitate his efforts to keep people, quote-unquote, safe from reprehensible rhetoric. We have no such obligation. Facebook already offers users the ability to block or ignore accounts they find distasteful. If they don't like how Facebook is governing speech and interactions, they can quit. What Zuckerberg's plan does, however, is undermine competition. If a company like Facebook sets speech codes that are too stifling for users, another innovator will jump into the gap and seek a platform that offers consumers what they seek. While I assume free political expression isn't the predominant concern of most social media users, it does exist. When government sets a, quote, baseline, unquote, for what's acceptable, there's no longer any competition for open debate. Worse, deliberation over free expression would be moved to the political arena, where the influence of scaremongering officials, ideologues, and rent-seeking tech corporations like Twitter, Facebook, and Google would dominate decisions. Quote, lawmakers often tell me we have too much power over speech, and frankly, I agree, Zuckerberg writes. It's true that the skewed manner in which social media companies regulate political speech is already hurting them. Many conservatives have rightly grumbled about the double standards employed by social media giants. Yet do they really believe handing over Facebook speech codes to censors is going to yield better results for open debate in the long run? Do they not remember that the Citizens United decision was the result of bureaucrats attempting to ban political speech? Do they not remember how easy it was for IRS officials tasked as arbiters of political speech to abuse that power? Have any of them seen a state civil rights commission in action? Empowering political appointees to codify the meaning of hate speech on the Internet would surely result in mission creep and a push to make unpopular topics off limits. Things like transphobia or Islamophobia come to mind. But there are an array of other topics on both sides of the ideological divide. Moreover, Zuckerberg wants to institute these plans in, quote, common global framework, unquote. Well, Vladimir Putin recently signed a bill that makes it a crime to disrespect, in quotes, the state and spread, quote, fake news, unquote. France, who Zuckerberg says is already working with Facebook, has passed hate speech laws that allow the banning of political content. The same is true for many other nations. And let's not forget, fully authoritarian nations like China. Are those the countries that Zuckerberg trusts to assist the United States in instituting a framework for acceptable Internet speech? Further, Zuckerberg contends that we need speech codes to protect our elections. Elections in quotes. There's nothing wrong with our elections, other than Donald Trump's victory, rankling Democrats. There are, of course, already laws that make it illegal for Facebook to accept money from foreign nations attempting to inject themselves into U.S. elections.
And I think that's a good sampling of what David's saying. Would we want it to be like this? Google app helps Muslims report blasphemy. This is in Indonesia. A new Google Android app helps Muslims report individuals who commit blasphemy or insult Islam with, quote, Smart Pakem. Launched in Indonesia last month at the request of the Indonesian government, users and government officials can report people who hold, quote, misguided beliefs in violation of Islamic law, reports Big League Politics. Islamic law, also called Sharia, forbids insults of Islam and the recognition of any other religion. We hope we're not going that way, that totalitarian way. We love our freedom of speech, and we must stand up for our rights. Thank you for listening to The Divided Kingdom. Write to us, and you can send a little cash if you want to keep us on air, to Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Good night.